so I'll write a list of all the books that I want to read.
Did you read that?
I did. Did you read that thing?
Yeah. Did you read?
Uh-huh.
Did you read?
Mm-hmm.
Did you read?
Of course I did.
Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Summer is the time to get a cold drink and an umbrella and all those books you've been meaning to read throughout the year, right? Yesterday, we had Ron Charles from The Washington Post giving us his picks for best new fiction. You can find that list on our website at thetakeaway.org. Today, we go into the world of nonfiction. Dana Williams is with me. She's the chair of the Department of English at Howard University and a reader of all things. Dana, welcome.
Thanks, Todd.
Dana, summertime is supposed to be for the novel, I guess, but I'm one of those people who has to fight the urge to keep reading nonfiction, and I often lose, so I'm glad you're here.
I think that's true for most people.
Yeah, and it's great to have you. Now, you've got some great picks on this list, and as I was reading down on them, I started to compile a list that's going to be too long for me to get through this summer. So let's start with Joan Williams's White Working Class, Overcoming Class Cluelessness in America. It's at the top of your list.
Yeah, this is one that I think has been talked about a lot. So in some ways, it became that book that you have to read just because everyone's talking about it. It emerged out of a short essay that she had written shortly after, or if not immediately after, the most recent presidential election. And so I see it as kind of the how did we get here book, if you will. And by here, we mean the era of populist discontent and the Trump era. I think its relevance to the Trump moment and its interrogation of the working class particularly is what is most attractive about the book for most people. It's a little complicated. It's gotten mixed reviews in the sense that it really tries to push back against the elitism that it critiques. So in some ways, the privilege reinscribes itself. But I think it's still a pretty good read in the context of books like Rick Wortsman's The End of Loyalty, which just came out, or in its latest iteration, or then even the Inside Hillary Clinton's Doomed Campaign. I wouldn't read it in isolation. I'd read it in conversation with those other books.
Hillbilly Elegy is a book that everyone
yes.
just had to read after the election, and this sounds like it's of the same canon.
I would agree. This one, I think the difference, though, to some degree is, again, it tries to close that gap of comprehension, like what we think we know and what we don't know and just how far off we are from people who've been silent about working class. So it, again, has some deficiencies in the sense that it's really ambiguous about what the working class is. She tries to define it in terms of income and values, but the range is so great, it's just not exactly clear who the white working class is. But she's very forthcoming about how complicated that title is and why she chose white working class over working class or blue collar, for instance.
Well, for people who are into politics or social justice or even sports, next on your list, you've got Craig Hodges' Long Shot, The Triumphs and Struggles of an NBA Freedom Fighter.
That one is great. I think this one is a good example, too, of books that you have said, I want to read this book, I got to read this book, I have to read this book. This one, although it came out in January, I didn't get to read it until the beginning of summer, and I'm so glad I did. I wish I had read it a little bit earlier. But, you know, great books last, and you can read them over and over again. But it's a really good book that gives some context to the contemporary activism that we're seeing with sports figures, everyone from Colin Kaepernick to, most recently, LeBron James. Most folks will remember Craig Hodges from being, you know, the great, phenomenal three-point shooter, both in isolation with the three-point contest, but then also in the context of his years playing with NBA teams, particularly the World Championship, one of the World Championships. He was on that second championship team with the Chicago Bulls. And he speaks out about how important activism was to him, how much controversy surrounded his activism on the court and off the court, particularly the letter that he gave to President George Bush, his wearing the dashiki at the White House. But it's more than the controversy story. It's a story about how activism is a central part of his life and had been from the beginning. And so that genealogy, this was my genealogy book. He sees himself in the context of freedom fighters from Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, Eartha Kitt, not just sports figures. So I think this is a really good book, an important book that young people can read as well. I think it's a really good read. It's a quick read, too.
And anyone who didn't know that they were into politics or social justice or that kind of history, if they thought they were just into basketball, they might find it interesting. Richard Rothstein has a new one out, The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America.
Yeah, this book has gotten a lot of attention. which is ironic, of course, because he talks about this forgotten history. But it's another one of those how do we get here books in some ways, because it makes clear how housing segregation then and now is informed by government law and policy. And we tend to think that people self-segregate, that they choose to live in certain neighborhoods, and that integration happened really late in the 1950s, early 1960s, and that that was something that was a matter of the courts to settle in isolated cases. But he talks very specifically about how the civilian public housing program, which intentionally created segregated public housing in areas that had been somewhat integrated. So it's interesting and ironic to see how some integrated areas were demolished so that segregated public housing could be established.
There's also the history of redlining across America.
Yes.
in neighborhoods.
Yes, and I think that this fills out. Many people became very familiar with the redlining with the Ta-Nehisi Coates essay that appeared in The Atlantic, and this fills that out quite a bit. Everything from how the Federal Housing Administration prevented Black people from buying homes in certain areas to how the agency refused to insure loans from developers who would permit African Americans to live or buy in those communities. And it's not just about race. It has some commentary about class as well, but and everything from how zoning laws made waste disposal and industrial plants available in some neighborhoods, kept businesses out in other instances. He's right, too. And the critical thing about it is that it's not just in the South, which we tend to think about Jim Crow segregation and segregation in housing, especially. He gives examples everywhere from L.A., Detroit to New York and in the South.
Well, let's leave your list here to round out our list with a largely unknown history in the American Northwest, Daniel J. Sharfstein's Thunder in the Mountains.
Yes. That book I came across in part through the Howard connection in some ways, because it's about Chief Joseph Oliver Otis Howard and the Nez Perce War, where we see a conflict between General O.O. Howard, who had in some ways been against or an anti-imperialist, but who becomes an imperialist ultimately. And I thought this was a good post 4th of July Independence Day read, in the sense that it really does show how difficult, or the scope of U.S. power, like who makes certain decisions about the rights of Native peoples, the meaning of liberty and equality and its relation to ethnicity, color, place, class. And then I think it's also just a very good read for us to rethink American history, and to think about how complicated figures that we revere, like General O.O. Howard, who was commissioner of the Freedoms Bureau and who saw himself as anointed by God to abolish slavery, for instance, and how ultimately he leans a little bit towards imperialism as the U.S. encroaches upon the land of Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce.
A summer nonfiction list to round out our list yesterday of the best summer fiction. Dana Williams, chair of the Department of English at Howard University. A great list. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, that's all for us today. Tell us what you're reading. You can send a tweet. We're at The Takeaway. I'm also on Twitter. I talk books. I talk politics. Hey, anything you want. I'm at Todd Zwillick. Anytime you like. Thank you so much for listening. I am Todd Zwillick, in for John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.